Welcome to Wicked Crime, a Massachusetts true crime podcast. In this episode, I'm diving into the many weird murders, mysteries, and monsters within the Bridgewater Triangle, which includes sightings of UFOs, puck wedgies, and Bigfoot, along with hitchhiking ghosts, satanic murders, and Native American curses. There's a lot of strange stories here, some of which are a little graphic, so as always, listener discretion is advised. So we're back over in the southeast part of Massachusetts with this one, specifically between the towns of Abington, Seekonk, and Freetown. If you connect these three on a map, you get what's known as the Bridgewater Triangle, a place that a lot of paranormal investigators believe is a hotbed of all kinds of activity. The name was actually coined by cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman back in like the 1970s, just to give this place a name instead of just referring to it as maybe like the creepy place in Massachusetts that weird stuff seems to happen. So yeah, he decided because of the shape, it's going to be called the Bridgewater Triangle, and the name stuck ever since. I even tried to look up like ley lines to see if this area had some kind of significance with that, but it was a dead end. Trying to look up ley lines anywhere kind of isn't easy, but I just figured that if somewhere was going to have some kind of weird electromagnetic spiritual energy, it would be there. But like I said, I didn't really come up with much in that realm. Also, there's a lot of stories involving cryptids in the Triangle, and I'm going to talk about those, but I'm going to do a whole episode on Massachusetts cryptids, probably the next one, honestly. So that's where I'm going to get into more detail about them. So if you're like, why aren't you talking more about the history of puck wedgies and more sightings? It's because I'm going to get into that deeper later on. So if you want to check that out, that will probably be the next episode, and I do recommend listening to that if you want more information on weird unexplained animals in our state. But before I get into some of the real weirdness inside the Bridgewater Triangle, let's talk about the actual true crime cases that are famous there, because even though I love like the creepy and strange stuff a lot, obviously, there are real things that happen in the area, then they're like more significant, obviously, than a puck wedgie sighting. So first, there's the murder of 15-year-old Mary Lou Aruda. There's actually an episode of Predator at Large about the case, and you can buy that at Amazon Prime if you want. I didn't see a free version, but it's also like $3, so I didn't mind paying, and it is very interesting and goes into more detail if you want to actually watch something about the case. So what's important to remember about this time period is that during the late 70s and 80s, the country was very fearful of Satanism. And they even thought that, like, music would turn kids into devil worshippers. Like, you were upstairs listening to Led Zeppelin, and it meant that you were going to suddenly worship the devil. Because people actually thought that Jimmy Page sold his soul to Satan to be able to play guitar the way he did. But that, we're not going to get into the history of Led Zeppelin, which I love them. But anyway, it was kind of a perfect storm. And it started with, like, the Manson family murders and Anton LaVey writing the Satanic Bible and The Exorcist coming out in the early 70s, and then religious leaders sort of pushed this fear of Satanism onto people. And then there were killings like the murders for Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, who thought that the devil had possessed his neighbor's dog and told him to kill people. And then he later said the killings were part of a satanic ritual with a cult that he was involved in. And then there was like Richard Ramirez, who was another serial killer who claimed to be a Satanist. So this idea of satanic cults really freaked people out. And I'll post an article about the satanic panic in America on my website at wickedxcrime.wordpress.com. But this thinking was definitely in the minds of people who lived in the area of the Bridgewater Triangle at the time. There were a lot of reports of satanic activity in the Freetown Fall River State Forest, and that was already the site of a lot of weird happenings within the Triangle. So when Mary Lou went missing on September 8th, 1978 in Raynham, which is right near the forest, some people were actually worried she was abducted by a satanic cult. She'd been riding her bike to meet a friend, and 2 hours after she'd been spotted, a friend found her bike abandoned right on the edge of the Freetown Fall River State Forest. Once her mother knew she was missing, she quickly called her friends to see if she was with them, and she wasn't. So surprisingly, the police actually got involved right away, and one of the reasons for that was because her bike was found near the forest, And they knew that there was a lot of evidence of satanic activity there, so they were worried that maybe something involving that had happened to her. They found evidence of animal sacrifices and had even found this weird underground bunker full of like doll clothes and satanic graffiti and a creepy chair that looked like it was carved out of a tree stump, and it looked almost child-sized with restraints on it, like someone had been tied to it. But I don't think that there were any official reports of a child being abused there, though that was the rumor, that there was like some satanic couple that was like abusing children there, but I don't know how true that actually is. But the police organized a search of the forest right away, and even once the cops were off duty, they still kept looking for her, but they came up empty-handed. There were a few witnesses who said they noticed a suspicious-looking man with big, wispy, dark hair, glasses, and driving a green car with a stripe on it, but it wasn't exactly easy to find this guy with such a little description. It wasn't until November that a group of guys riding motorbikes through the woods found what they thought was some kind of Halloween prop, until they realized it was a body. Police came and discovered it was the decomposed body of Mary Lou, who'd been tied to a tree while she was still alive and left there to die. They couldn't determine if she was sexually assaulted due to the decomposition, but they believed the cause of death was strangulation, that after a while she eventually lost consciousness and the restraints around her neck strangled her once her head leaned forward. In some reports it said she was decapitated, but I think if that was the case it was probably from decomposition, since investigators were pretty sure she was still alive when tied up and she died from her restraints and the strangulation, suffocation. Which you have to imagine that that was like a completely awful way to die, especially this poor young girl who was probably terrified and scared, and it's, you don't even want to think too hard about it because it's really sad. But there wasn't a ton of evidence to go on, so all they really had were things they gathered from the scene of her disappearance, which was a Benson and Hedges cigarette, a tire tread, and her bicycle. They actually brought in one of the women who'd seen the green car and tried to hypnotize her to see if they could get a partial plate number, and she came up with 6-8, which bit them in the ass once the trials happened because hypnosis wasn't considered viable evidence, which I can understand. They started looking into past cases to see if anything might help them figure out who was responsible, and in 1969, a man named James Cater was sent to prison for the abduction and assault of a 13-year-old girl. She'd been riding her bicycle on a secluded road when Cater abducted her, sexually assaulted her, and eventually tied her to a tree in the woods and left her there. The only difference between her and Mary Lou was that he used a bedsheet around her neck, which prevented the first girl from going unconscious, so she was able to escape and went to police. So when the police investigating Mary Lou Arruda's murder looked into Cater, they learned that no, he's no longer in jail. He'd been reformed and released from Bridgewater State Prison and was working at a donut shop in town. They brought him in for questioning and he seemed really relaxed, gave an alibi, but the alibi didn't hold up. Once they saw his car, a green car with a black stripe matching the description, not only did the plate start with 6-8, but there's a mark on the front fender that would be the same height as Mary Lou's bike. They find Benson Hedges' cigarettes in his car, the same ones found at the abduction site. And the damn tire tread matched the one that they took at the abduction site, too. And that reminded me of the Danny Croteau case, and I'm still pissed that Levine's tires didn't match a tire tread, even though it's likely he changed his tires, which was smarter than Cater, clearly. And finally, they found newspaper clippings about Mary Lou's murder and disappearance in his trunk. So, like, obviously this guy is guilty, right? Well, first his lawyer tried to argue that it was actually a satanic cult who killed Mary Lou, even though he tried to do this to a girl before. But then the case kept getting overturned and there was a mistrial, and it wasn't until 1996 that he was sent to jail for life without parole. It took that long. And the thing is, which they mentioned in the documentary, if he hadn't been released from prison, would this have even happened to Mary Lou? Like, if he was still in jail for this other assault, she might still be alive. I mean, eventually he might have gotten out and tried the same thing with some other girl. But it's just one of those things that it's, oh, God. If they had done their job right, or if he had gone to jail for an appropriate amount of time, maybe it would have saved this poor girl's life. It's just very sad. And honestly, you don't hear much about her case when you look into the Bridgewater Triangle, probably because it's not supernatural, but I think it's still very relevant. A lot of people think the land where the triangle is cursed. And I by no means think that Cater did what he did because he was, like, influenced by some evil energy, but weird things do seem to happen there, like with the satanic cult. I'll tell you something, this podcast has really opened my eyes to cases I had no idea about, and while listening to the Strange Sessions podcast about the Triangle, they briefly touched on Carl Drew and all these satanic murders that happened, and I was like, wait, what? Another thing I'd never heard of in Massachusetts. So he was part of what an article on Cult Nation, which is great, I'm going to link that article on my website. They referred to it as the Fall River Cult. And basically it consisted of a handful of prostitutes and criminals in the Fall River, New Bedford, and Freetown State Forest area who were responsible for three murders, all of which were said to be part of satanic sacrifices. Now let me clear something up. Just like how Wiccans are incredibly misunderstood, so are Satanists. The actual satanic religion isn't about performing weird sacrifices and rituals and worshiping Satan. It's actually more focused on the worship of yourself and giving into the things and indulgences you want. And I believe it specifically is like, hey, don't kill people. Because essentially everyone's body and essence is considered like their own property, and violating that as their right in any way is against Satanism. And it always kind of sounded pretty reasonable to me. I think it's just supposed to be like an antithesis of Christianity, only in the sense that it doesn't have these rules it wants its followers to abide by and lets people do as they please as long as it doesn't infringe on someone else doing what they please, on their desires, if that makes any sense. But a lot of people don't realize that and think that Satanists want to sacrifice babies and behead goats, but that's not true. And nor do real witches for that matter either. So even though this Fall River cult called themselves Satanists, they weren't really Satanists. Honestly, I think that when we see these culty murders like this, they use the whole Satan thing as a cover or justification just to do evil shit. Like, oh, I was possessed by the devil, so he made me do it. No, you weren't. You're a murderer. Not that I don't believe in possession, but that's like a whole other podcast. We're not going to get into that. So the first body that's found is that of 17-year-old Doreen Levesque, I believe that's how you say her name, of New Bedford, and she was found behind Demon High School in Fall River on October 13th, 1979. Her wrists had been bound in fishing line, and she'd been tortured, suffered multiple skull fractures from being stabbed, and they later determined she was actually stoned to death, which made investigators believe she was killed by a group of people instead of just one, as police initially thought. Doreen was a runaway who became a prostitute, and so they thought that one of her clients might have killed her, but that wasn't the case once they realized she was stoned to death. A month after Doreen is found, a man named Andy Maltias reports his 22-year-old girlfriend Barbara Raposa missing to police. Barbara was also a prostitute, and Andy was no saint by any means himself, and he was said to be abusive towards her. He told police that he was now a worshiper of Jesus, but previously worshipped Satan with his girlfriend, and that they belonged to a local cult, and that he believed that the cult did something to Barbara, and that they also killed Doreen Levesque. He told police to talk to Karen Marsden and Robin Murphy, also prostitutes, and that they knew more about Doreen's murder. Once they were brought in, Marsden was the one who broke down and said that Carl Drew was the one who murdered Doreen. She didn't really give more information than that, and though Drew had a connection to Doreen, he was actually her pimp, there was no evidence connecting him to the murder. But according to Karen Marsden, he was the leader of this entire ring of prostitutes and had turned them all into a satanic cult, saying he was the mastermind behind everything. They told police that they would perform their rituals in the Freetown Fall River State Forest and that Drew had threatened to kill them if they went to police. On January 26, 1980, Barbara Raposa's body was found in the woods behind an abandoned factory in the same state Doreen Levesque's had been in. She'd been sexually assaulted, wrist tied with fishing line, and bludgeoned with a rock. Police already knew she was part of the Fall River cult, and her boyfriend, Andy Maltias, actually tried to tell police that he had a psychic dream about her murder, but ended up describing everything in such accurate detail that they arrested him. Then Robin Murphy admits she was there when he killed Raposa, and he did so because she was cheating on him. Murphy said she was scared of him, and that's why she waited to tell police. They couldn't really connect the two murders yet, but luckily Murphy helped kind of put everything together for them. She told police that Carl Drew sacrificed Doreen Levesque's soul to Satan because she tried to leave their cult. Murphy claimed she was in the car while Drew and another man killed Doreen, and that she heard absolutely nothing, But it was basically bullshit because the evidence said that the poor girl was tortured for an extended period of time, and there's no way that Murphy wouldn't have heard anything. And her stories kept changing over time about all the murders that she said she'd been witness to. Now, to me, what really looked bad for Robin Murphy was the fact that all throughout this whole thing, Karen Marsden was also giving her own account of things, and though she also said Carl Drew was the ringleader, she said that Murphy was directly involved too. And then Karen goes missing. So she's reported missing on February 9th, 1980, but it's not until April that a piece of her skull and some hair was found at Duval Pond in Westport, along with some clothing, sheep bones, and three cat carcasses. Her actual body was never found. Another prostitute and cultist, Maureen Sparta, said Robin Murphy had killed Karen, which to me seems kind of obvious. Like, she'd been talking to the police, then all of a sudden she disappears after she was saying Robin Murphy was involved. Like, come on. Another prostitute from the group, Carol Fletcher, said she dropped off Karen, Carl Drew, Robin Murphy, and another pimp named Carl Davis in the woods to perform a ritual. And once police brought Robin in, she basically broke down and blamed Carl Drew for masterminding the entire thing as punishment for Karen for talking with police. And because she had been witness to the other murders. Under his guidance, or so Robin said, they pulled out Karen's hair, stoned her, Carl cut off one of her fingers, broke her neck, and finally decapitated her. He then apparently made Robin perform sexual acts on her body, carved an X into her torso while speaking in tongues, and finally they burned her body. There was a lot of other crazy stuff that the cult was said to be involved in, like making animal sacrifices every 30 days and drinking blood out of a human skull, but it's believed that a lot of this is just stories. Eventually, though, Andy Maltias was sentenced to life in prison without parole for murdering Barbara Raposa. Robin Murphy got charged with second-degree murder for Karen Marsden's murder and got life in prison with the possibility of parole, but after being released in 2004, she violated that parole and went back to jail. Carl Drew didn't exactly stand trial, and he wasn't charged with anything at first until after a few assaults he finally went to jail for those, and he had an extensive criminal background, and for the first-degree murder of Karen Marsden. Doreen Levesque's murder never went to trial because they decided that it would cost too much and it would only lean back to convicting Drew and Murphy for even longer sentences, which they were already in for life, so what more are you going to add on there? Murphy even recanted her entire testimony in 1984 and basically said that she did what she did because she believed Drew had murdered many other women, even though that was never proven. I honestly think that Robin Murphy was way more involved than she said, and she was just as responsible and manipulative as Carl Drew. And a lot of people believe she orchestrated everything, and there's even a petition to get Carl Drew out of jail. And apparently some people even think that they were part of this large satanic cult network that was operating in the Northeast, and that they were the ones responsible for the New Bedford Highway killings. The Freetown Fall River State Forest continues to be a site of apparent devil worship. There was this weird bunker that was found that I mentioned before, and there was also this little shack found that was covered in satanic graffiti and was rumored to be a place where they had an altar and where rituals would be performed. There was also a lot of animal mutilations that happened in the forest, the worst of which being a number of cows being slaughtered, which police believed was cult activity, and I feel like other people attributed it to a weird animal. But so, we have these very real, very dark murders happening within the bounds of the Bridgewater Triangle, and there's definitely more, but these two are just some of the most famous, I guess you could say. But some people believe that the dark energy or cursed area within the triangle was actually the result of the bloody aftermath of King Philip's War. It's considered the bloodiest war per capita in American history, and that had 3,000 men, women, and children of the Wampanoag tribe killed or sold into slavery. Chief Massasoit had at first welcomed the settlers, but then once his son Metacomet, also known as King Philip, became chief, he actually gathered the Wampanoag tribes and pushed back against the colonists who were trying to take more and more land from them. But it ended with one of Metacomet's men betraying him and he was killed, and his head was hung up for 20 years at Plymouth Colony. One of the things that came out of this history is the legend of the wampum belt. So this beautiful belt, this like tribal belt made of wampum, was given by the Wampanoag to the settlers. And the legend is that if the belt is returned to the Wampanoag land within the Bridgewater Triangle, peace will be restored. And although there are reports of this belt being gifted, it then, like, disappears from history. So is this thing, like, sitting in an old closet somewhere? Did it rot away outside? Because maybe if it got brought back, the bad juju in the triangle would stop. Because that's, like, the whole joke is, like, oh, well, if you bring the belt back, maybe the triangle will be normal again. But who knows? There's so many stories of people disrespecting Native American land and it being cursed. So our whole state is probably cursed, honestly. Maybe the whole country's cursed. Maybe that's why 2020 sucks. I don't know. During King Philip's War, the Wampanoag took shelter in Hockomock Swamp. And in their language, Hockomock meant a place where spirits dwell. And this swamp is another hot spot in the triangle, though it's up in the northern part where the Freetown Fall River State Forest is in the bottom right. The Hockomock Swamp was nearly drained at one point to develop more land, but now it's considered an area of critical environmental concern. And I'd love to take a walk there sometime. Honestly, it's probably very pretty. But anyway, there's been artifacts found there dating back 9,000 years ago, which is absolutely wild to me and sort of reminds me of Oak Island and how they've been finding random things there from all points in history. Like, 9,000 years ago, what sort of native tribe was, like, wandering around Hockomock Swamp? It's very cool to me, and I wish there was more information on it. But Hockomock Swamp, besides having some historical significance, is a place where a large portion of weird and supernatural sightings happen within the Bridgewater Triangle. There was one report of a man getting his pony slaughtered by some giant black dog with glowing red eyes that no one was able to find. In 1971, Norton Police Sergeant Thomas Downey saw a giant winged creature near the swamp and was actually ridiculed once he told people about it. And this wasn't the only sighting of such a creature, which have led people to believe that it was a thunderbird. And thunderbirds were supernatural beings described by the Wampanoag as creatures who created lightning and thunder and were extremely powerful. I'm going to get more into them in my next episode, along with Puckwudgies, which are another creature that's said to roam Hockomock, along with also being in the Freetown Fall River State Forest. Puckwudgies are also a Native American creature that's sometimes said to be helpful to humans and sometimes harmful. They can even turn to balls of light, apparently, and many people have reported seeing balls of different colored light in the swamp. There's also a lot of possible Bigfoot sightings in the swamp. Now, I didn't wander that far down the Bigfoot path because I feel like that could just go on forever, but there have been a few sightings by trappers in the swamp who saw a creature who was covered in hair and human-like, and one man reported that it smelled musty and almost like a skunk. The whole Bigfoot thing is kind of hard for me because I feel like somewhere like the Hockomock Swamp is hardly big enough to hide an entire species of large human-like creatures or puckwudgies or thunderbirds for that matter. But if I have any Bigfoot enthusiasts listening, I'd love to know your take on it. Like, are there Sasquatch in Massachusetts? And specifically, do they live in the Hockomock Swamp? Also, Sasquatch and Bigfoot, it's the same, right? As far as I know, it's the same. But like I said, I'm not a Bigfoot guy. I don't know the whole Bigfoot mythology. But we might get a little more into that next episode. But that's a lot of info to go down. Bigfoot is no joke to people who really, really believe in them as a species. But besides all these cryptids hanging out in the area, there's also a lot of ghost sightings happening too. In both the swamp and the Freetown Fall River State Forest, people have reported hearing Native American chanting and drums, seeing apparitions of Native Americans, and there have been a lot of reports of phantom fires. Like, people will see them from a distance, but the closer they get, they disappear. This happened multiple times on Lake Nippinicket, which is located right next to the Hockomock Swamp. And people boating on the lake have witnessed fires on the tiny island in the lake, which they then disappear the closer that they get. There's also the Assonet Ledge in the state forest that was created by the Fall River Granite Company back in the 1800s. It's become not only a place of supernatural sightings, but apparent satanic activity, and most of all, a place that people have died from either jumping or falling off. Allegedly, if you go there, you might feel this uneasy feeling when you're at the ledge, and many people have said that they've had the urge to jump off. So you have to wonder if this is just like a weird story people made up because of the location, or do you really get overcome by something strange if you go there? So cutting through part of the forest is Copacabana Road, and this is a place where a number of people have reported being followed by a phantom truck driver who comes out of nowhere behind them and essentially drives them off the road so they avoid being hit, and then the truck disappears. A lot of the road is unpaved and not easy to navigate, which you can actually see in the documentary. It shows it, and I wouldn't want to drive it in my car because my car is low and sad, and I wouldn't want to get stuck on a dirt road in the middle of the night being chased by a ghost truck. And just thinking about getting tailgated by a crazy truck driver at night, like, really gives me anxiety. I hate when people do that. But they do warn, like, be careful if you go because the road is terrible. So you could go and get chased by a truck there, or you could drive on Route 44 through Rehoboth and pick up a ghost of a red-haired hitchhiker on that road. He's usually dressed in plaid, and apparently once he's in your car, he disappears after you drive a bit down the road. One woman even said she saw his reflection once in her windshield as she drove down the road. So coinciding with the ghostly encounters, there are also three weird rocks located in the triangle. There's Profile Rock in Freetown in the forest, which literally looks like someone's profile. The Wampanoag considered it sacred, and it said that that was where Metacomet was killed. And there's been like a lot of Native American ghost sightings there, like a man sitting on the rock with open arms, and there's reports of voices being heard there too. Then you have Solitude Stone in Bridgewater and its lesser known partner, the Minister Stone, which both have poems carved by Reverend Timothy Otis Payne from 1862. I read in a few places that a body was actually found near Solitude Stone, and that's how it was discovered, and that it was therefore also called Suicide Stone, but I'm not sure how true that is. The carving on the stone reads, "All ye who in future days walk by Nuckatesset Stream, love not him who hummed his lay, cheerful to the parting beam, but in the beauty that he wooed in this quiet solitude." So hence the name Solitude Stone. The last strange rock is Dighton Rock, which was originally discovered in the riverbed of Taunton River back in 1680. The rock is covered in carvings, and for centuries, people have been trying to figure out who the hell carved this stuff on this thing. Some say it was just the Wampanoag, others say it was ancient Phoenicians, or Portuguese sailors, or the Vikings, or even, like, the Chinese. But there's a bunch of evidence of all these different people on it, and I just wonder if maybe, like, multiple cultures showed up and just carved something on it because other people carved things on it. And the rock was actually uprooted and taken to Berkeley, Mass, where it now has its own little tiny museum that you can visit at the Dighton Rock State Park. So I think that'd actually be cool to go take a look at it. Not that I'm going to be able to tell who carved anything into this thing, but I wonder if they can perform some kind of like carbon dating or something on it to find out, I don't know how old it is. I don't know if that would help with figuring out who carved things on it, but who knows. But some people actually think it was carved by aliens, which actually wouldn't be too weird considering all the freaking UFO sightings that have happened within the triangle dating back centuries. But the earliest recorded one that I could find was in 1908 when two undertakers saw what looked like a lantern floating in the sky that hovered there for 40 minutes. People have seen strange floating lights thought to be UFOs. There were some seen landing on Route 44 in Taunton, maybe picking up that red-haired hitchhiker. There's been one spotted over Lake Nippinicket. Oh my god, it's like a tongue twister, some of these words. Hockomock, Nippinicket, Rehoboth, Massachusetts, man, we have some interesting name stuff. But in the documentary, you can actually see like an interview with a former law enforcement officer who shows a small replica he made of a triangular UFO that he saw in 1994, and he seems very much convinced it was a UFO. So I guess the moral of the story is, if you're looking for something out of the ordinary, you can probably find it in the Bridgewater Triangle. And there's been a lot of people who work in the supernatural field who make it a point to say that even though it's called the Bridgewater Triangle, it's not confined by a set space or lines. I think when Lauren Coleman coined the term, it was just a good way to label the area, and it just happened to work. But even if you look at the center of this whole triangle, you have Taunton, which is a former location of the Taunton State Hospital, and we know that a lot of bad things happened in those places back in the day. So maybe the triangle is a place where weird things happen because of whatever energy is there. Maybe it was cursed by Native Americans. Or maybe they knew the land itself had something dark on it, and that's why they called the swamp Hockomock Swamp, the place where spirits dwell. And maybe this weird energy will just keep leaching out, and soon we'll start seeing, like, Mothman hanging out with us over here in Western Mass. So definitely come back next week where I'll get deeper into all the Massachusetts cryptids. I'm sure I'll be talking more about the Triangle a little bit again. And tell me if you have any stories from the Triangle, if you've like high-fived a Pukwudgie in the woods one time. I don't know. I hope everyone had a happy and safe Thanksgiving. I was trying to get this episode out before, but things have been crazy. I had to like clean my house and make an Oreo chocolate cream pie. And I fell down another hole with this one because of the true crime bits, which I thought were really interesting. So all of my sources will be on my website at wickedxcrime.wordpress.com, like the documentary of both the Bridgewater Triangle and the Mary Lou Arruda case on Amazon Prime. You can also find me on Facebook if you look up Wicked Crime and on Twitter at wicked_crime. The theme is by our OG Kevin MacLeod. As always, take care of yourself, look after yourself, sneeze into your elbow, not your hands. Enjoy all of your leftovers because I know I will. And thank you for listening. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.